to order at 8:12 a.m. We only have myself and my co-chair, Gabrielle Ledoux, here, and everyone else is, I think there's some people coming, the rest of the committee, some of the committee members, and some have been excused. I would like to recognize Chris, the House Recording Secretary, and thank her for that, and Alex, our LIO moderator, and our Community and Regional Affairs Committee aides are Lisa Vaught and Kimberly Clark, KC, over here. And thank you for coming. This is a very important day for me, and I'm sure a lot of people who are here to make the presentation. I know it's hard for some of you to get up and talk about your experiences and everything, but we need to talk about it amongst each other. We need to talk to people about it, and we need to tell people what our experiences were, how bad those experiences were, and how it has made us stronger to deal with that situation, and also to come to terms of a child's or a family member's death or a close friend's death by suicide. Suicide has no, they don't know your station in life. They don't. Suicide doesn't know your station in life. This is Bob here, and I want to welcome him to the committee. He's on the committee. He's some representing some of you, I'm sure, or all of you. And thank you, Bob. But it's a terrible thing. I went through it. My family went through it. When my son did the drastic deed. And I think of him daily. But I use that on a daily basis to remind myself why I talk about it, why I must tell people about our experience, and it can help us. And I would like to welcome the delegation of the Kunwasavik? Staff and community members, Billy, I've known Billy for a long time, from Monarch. He's a coordinator or co-investigator of the University of Alaska Fairbanks, Kunwasavik, and also Raymond Oney. Is he here? No? Okay, Roy Bell. I saw Roy over there. And he's a coordinator for the program. Joey and Joe, right there. Paul Nukasup? No, over that way? Oh, there. Oh.
Who's my dad's
Ben.
He's got part of here, so he never comes.
Okay. Stacy Rasmus. Hello, Stacy. Joseph Bell. Welcome. Mr. Mayor. Ben, I already introduced you. Ben is almost the same name. I mean, the last name, because Nalayak Nuksa. Don Gump. Thank you for coming. And Tool Man, thank you. And the rest of you here, welcome to this hearing, presentation by, so I want to make sure everybody turns off their phones. And please, can the presenters come forward, introduce yourselves, and start from your.
Good morning. the co-chairs and representative, thank you for giving us the opportunity. We have a presentation in stages, and first of all, Dr. Stacy Rasmus will be going through the history and where we started. And but first, I'd like to, you know, this is my culture, to recognize our elder representative from Hooper Bay, the mayor, real advocate of the work that we do, and without, you know, people like him, we wouldn't be here. So through co-chairs and through our elder, we'd like to, and the members of our community, our elders, we are happy to present. And like I said, Dr. Stacy Rasmus will take us through where we started and how we're trying to build structure, an indigenous structure in our communities to combat these disparities.
You should introduce yourself.
Well, for the record, I'm Bill Charles. I'm from Imangak. Co-investigator, work for a Alaska Native Health Research in Fairbanks.
I have the same problem.
Yes. Okay. Hi. I'm Stacy Rasmus from Fairbanks, Alaska. I'm a research professor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks Center for Alaska Native Health Research. I thank you for allowing us this opportunity to share with you some of the stories, the amazing success stories. You're going to hear from their hearts both, you know, what the people in the communities have faced, but also what they've been able to together overcome and achieve. And our presentation today is going to be focused on what's working in the communities and what's still there in terms of the strengths, the survival strategies, how we can utilize what's there, those inherent strengths, to like Billy said, combat some of the issues that we see with the young people in the communities. And so we do have a presentation, and so I don't know how easy it's going to be for you all to see that since your backs are to the...
No,
oh, can I see? Oh, hey. Oh, you got a good TV right there. We got this.
No, we have eyes in the back of our heads. That's our role representatives.
Great. And you also have in front of you packets that I want to acknowledge that the youth have designed for you, the covers. And then on the inside, you have some program information, you know, because I know that you probably have lots to read, so we didn't want to overwhelm you with reading materials. So you have, you know, on the left side, you have an update that really features Hooper Bay, but on the back has some program information. Underneath that, you have really hot off the presses data from Hooper Bay that shows using our scientific strategies what's working.
For the record, I'm sorry, let me
okay. Could
you to pause for a minute. We have Representative Neil Foster with us. Thank you. Go ahead, sorry.
No, it's okay. We were just going over background and presentation overview information anyway. So in your packet, and I think Representative Olson, your packet's over there. Foster, sorry. It's right there, right next to you. So we have the data, and we're going to be talking a bit about how we are partnering, us researchers at the university, how we're partnering with the communities here to help provide that evidence that these cultural, traditional practices, that they are effective, that they do address and help prevent suicide, increase reasons for living, create healthy young people. We help provide that evidence to the community so they're able to, you know, build programming and services around traditional modalities. And then on the other side, you have the model that guides our prevention implementation. And before we start, I also want to acknowledge I need to acknowledge my ancestors, too, and where I come from, because you started in a cultural way. So I sit at this table. I'm a Lummi tribal member from Washington State, but I've lived in Alaska for over 15 years, and I work still with my tribes in the Pacific Northwest, but also work with the tribes in the YK Delta region on these issues related to youth and trying to create healthy young people and communities, because it was something that was very important to me, and it saved my life, my people, and my culture, and my traditions, and I know it can continue to save lives and create, you know, these strong, healthy young people that we need. So that's why I sit here at the table today.
Before we go, before I recognize you, we have Harry German here, a member of the CRA committee.
Good morning.
Good morning. Ms. Rasmus, did you grow up on a, do they have reservations?
Yeah.
Did you grow up on a reservation or in the city?
No, reservation. But my dad was non-native, and so I'd go back and forth. He would, he was a CPA, so he was never ever home, and I never saw him ever. So he would leave me with my mom's family on the reservation quite a bit. So, you know, it was really both. I had kind of a both upbringing, and that was a real struggle. But it was also a real, it's been a real benefit, too, because I can kind of hop in between and things. But
Thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we will...
Well, before we start, Madam Chair, and to the chairs, and when she began work, she lived out in our communities for a long time. She is a resident of our communities, and the work that we're doing, you know, with Sally Smith's dream of community-based participatory research, you know, that started, allows her to be out, well, doesn't allow us, I think she'd rather be out in the community 6 months out of the year, mm-hmm. still today, as we do our work.
Yeah.
I just wanted to add that.
Yes, that's where my tenure is. That's how I'm getting tenure. So today what we want to do is we just want to take you through, we want to tell stories today, because that's also part of our way, is we want to tell you the story of some strength and healing that's happening. It's happening here in Alaska. Again, I think there is a tendency to focus on what's not working and what's going wrong and the problems that Native people in particular are facing. And so we'll start with talking about this kind of social movement towards, you know, this focus on the strengths and the protections and what's healing and what's still going right and what's really good about being Native and why we need to protect that, why we need to continue to support our traditional ways. So we'll take you through some background and then we'll have the representatives from Alakanuk that were here. I'm not sure, I don't think you have the full list, so I think by the end of this you'll be meeting all of our delegation that has come to be able to introduce themselves to you. But we've brought representatives from Alakanuk, where really this movement began. And I think Representative Nagyek, you have the Kunazavik in front of you, and Josie and Desiree will talk to you about Alakanuk's story. And then we want to move in to share with you how it's growing, how this movement is expanding with the support of everyone in this room in the state of Alaska. This work has grown to include, we have four other communities, and today we've brought Hooper Bay, who's a community that's been working now with us for about 2 years, and has really just transformational experiences to share with you that both, you know, you'll hear about what they're seeing in their communities, what they're seeing with their eyes and feeling, you know, with their souls, but you're also, you know, you've got the data we can show you, you know, empirically that young people are changing because of this work in the community, and they're changing in a good way, and good things are happening in a community that throughout the state has been, you know, known in not always positive ways, known to really struggle with suicide in particular. And both these communities, Alakanuk and Hooper Bay, were known in this around the state as communities that, you know, were devastated by suicide. Today, you're going to hear stories of hope and healing from these communities. And then what we wanted to do was have Billy really take you, you know, as a way of bringing it all together through the FESRIC model, which is the UPIC process. That's what this prevention, what the intervention is all about, is it's a community process. This is a community-level prevention effort. This is a community doing this on their own. Billy's going to tell you how they do that, using a UPIC, using their ways to do it. And so just, you know, really briefly, you know, that the first point when it says from a people in peril to a people awakening, you know, we all know. We all know these. We've all seen these, you know, with the rates and the numbers, and it's always this, you know, this representation of Alaska Native people skyrocketing off the charts in terms of the disparities in suicide and alcohol abuse, and disparities in this with young Alaska Natives, and disparities with young Alaska Native men, and young Alaska Native women. I didn't have this slide, but you know, I could put up another slide that shows how young Alaska Native women in the 15 to 24 age group are exponentially higher rates of suicide attempts and being hospitalized at API in Anchorage. Yes.
So by when you say attempts, is the suicide rate itself exponentially higher, or just the attempts? And what do you read into the difference between the attempts and the actual outcomes, if you do read anything into it? Mm-hmm.
So this slide right here shows the, in its prevalence, there's a little bit of difference of rate and prevalence, but it's prevalence of completed suicides by gender. And by, you know, it says by race, and it shows that Alaska Native males, and young Alaska Native males, have higher completion. But there is, we also have data from the Alaska Vital Statistics that shows that for Alaska Native females, their rate of being hospitalized from lethal attempts is higher, is the highest. So that's, and reading into it, could you further explain that question?
I mean, what does that mean, if anything?
You know, what it means is that this issue cross-cuts gender, race, age. And so when I show this slide, I want to clarify this doesn't mean that we need to focus only on Alaska Native men, that this issue is affecting young people of both genders. That was the reason behind talking about the attempts. So, because this is a complex issue. There's a lot going into the issue of suicide. You know, it's hard to separate it out, you know, from things like the substance abuse and, you know, the thoughts and the actions and just hurting and the self-harm behavior. And so we don't want to just keep it too focused.
I understand. I'm just trying to determine whether you may think that with respect to the women, at least,
yeah,
that the suicide attempts may be a cry for help,
as opposed
to actually wanting to complete it.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. And I think, it's all a cry for help. All of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Something's missing.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when we look at the alcohol, you know, abuse rates and the substance abuse rates, and again, this is usually the portrayal. Look at Alaska Natives. You know, they're always at the top of the charts for some of these things. But, as, you know, the substance abuse is a cry for help, too. It's another form of self-harm.
It's a symptom.
And so in 1988... there was a Pulitzer Prize winning series called The People in Peril. I'm not sure if you're familiar with this, if you've ever seen this in the Anchorage Daily News. And it featured Alakanuk, the community of Alakanuk, in particular. It also, they had other villages focused on it, also focused on the urban issues in Anchorage. But they featured the community of Alakanuk in one of the pieces of the series. And this graphic comes right out of The People in Peril. And you have people here from Alakanuk today who are going to, you know, who can speak to this as well, because the Lekanuk has historically suffered from epidemic levels of suicide and clusters where over short periods of time, you know, entire generations almost are lost and to this. And this wasn't the only time. So in 1988 when this came out, though, and, you know, there's a lot of attention in the state. And there's a lot of talk about, oh, my goodness, you know, at this rate, you know, the people are going to be gone. You know, and Alaska Native leaders got together. This was in 1992. They had a summit in 1992. And my mentor and the professor I worked with when I was getting my PhD, Dr. Jerry Mohat, was at that summit from the University of Alaska Fairbanks. And the Alaska Native leaders said, hey, you know, look, yes, it is true. We are suffering these issues. But there are people in our communities that are strong, that have the knowledge, the teachings to bring us back and to live the good and healthy and strong way. There are people in our communities still yet. We are not a vanishing, dying people. We still have, you know, our passion for life. We still have, you know, so much to live for. And we want to learn more about how to utilize those strengths. We want to learn more about all the Alaska Native people who are living healthy lives. And with that call to action, and there was a call to action. It was supported by AFN as well. A call to action to say, you know, we need to know more about what is protecting our people, those Alaska Native people who do not commit suicide. And there are, you know, the majority of young people, I think we tend to forget this, the majority of young Alaska Native people do not commit suicide. And are, you know, they are going on to lead, you know, healthy lives and become parents and go to college. There are Alaska Native people who are developing into amazing leaders. How can we create more of those? That was the question. How do we do that? Let's do that. Let's focus on that. And we did that with the People Awakening Project. This is the work I came up here to do, so I came up to work on the People Awakening Project. And that's how I first got connected with the Yupik communities and first went to Lekanuk and Imanuk. It was through the People Awakening Project to interview and try and identify sources of strength, sources of resilience, strategies that we could really you know, bring out and support more through prevention efforts. And so we, with this project, described a model of protection and recovery. The model of protection, though, has come to inform the culturally based prevention work in Lekanuk. That's why I speak of that today. And in the Kanazavik and in the materials you have, you know, we identified this set of protective factors, but really it was the model of, okay, how do you teach these? How do you build the strengths and protections into young people? What's the process? What are the steps that you take to, again, the community really is focused on increasing reasons for living, wanting to live? And so through a community-driven, community-initiated effort, the Kanazavik was developed. And I'm going to switch this over to Josie very soon, you know, just 1 minute. It actually might be, I'm going to switch to Josie. And we'll bring Josie in. We'll bring two more people up here now. Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Could you speak your name? My name is Josie Edmund. I'm from Lekanuk. I'm a prevention coordinator for our program, Shom Dungenun.
Welcome.
My name is Desiree Joe. I'm from Lekanuk, and I'm one of the youth that participate in the program.
Thank you.
So, I think it was in 2002, that's when I was living out in the villages. I was a mental health clinician or village clinical supervisor for YKHC at the time. And I helped serve Lekanuk. It was one of my villages. And from 2002 to 2004, and mind you, I had just, you know, fresh out of school, thought I knew what was up because I grew up on a reservation, went out to the villages, and encountered something I hadn't seen. That community lost 11 young people in an 18-month period. and I didn't know what to do.
Did you you said you'd encountered something that you'd never seen before. So in Native reservations across the United States, such as the Lummi population, is there a statistically significant difference between the suicide rate amongst people who live on a reservation and other folks?
Well, yeah, I mean, you can look across, again, this is a very complex issue, even here in the state of Alaska. You know, it really is a community by community. And on the Lummi Reservation, while I was growing up, I did not see suicides. I'd heard, like, maybe one or two, we'd heard about it. I saw a lot of overdoses from drugs. Actually, I saw a lot of that, and today I see. That's what I do, is I do prevention with opiates, and the Lummi Reservation is increasing. I didn't see it while I was growing up as much. It really wasn't, you know, it was different. You know, and if you look across the state of Alaska, there are villages where you don't see, you know, the types of clustering that you see in other communities, even here. So it's, you can't generalize and say, well, reservations in Lower 48 don't have this problem. So I'm not saying that. I'm on record saying no, because there are reservations that have a very severe problem. It wasn't something I had seen as much, and certainly not what I experienced in Alakanuk. And does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
By the way, those are nice cusspucks you're wearing.
Aren't they?
Sorry.
It's a good thing to be this.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Did you make those as part of your program? Too? No. Those ones you're wearing? Oh, they make.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No, it's good. So Alakanuk was experiencing one at this time. Again, like you saw with the. You know, the People in Peril series in 88. So there, another cluster was happening, and you know, and the people in the community, though, at this point, came together. And the tribal administrator, who's Ray Oni, who couldn't be here today, he was the tribal administrator at the time, and he asked me, you know, what's going on here? What do you think is going on with the youth? You know, and I said at that point, you know, I think that's an excellent question, and one that the community should be really asking each other and working on, you know, figuring out that answer. And we helped, and I went back to UAF to work with Dr. Moha to help answer that question and really help support the community in their own process to address this issue, because they were ready and they were already taking active steps in the community. That was another thing that I noticed. I served four different communities on Lower Yukon, and Alakanuk was really the one where I would go there and they had a resource community, they had people coming together already. They were already taking steps to deal with it. So when the university came in with funding from the National Institutes of Health at that point to help them grow their effort and create the Knozovic, the community, it was a community that asked us to come in. That's one of the key differences, too. It was a community that said, we're ready. These are the steps that we're already taking to do this. We just need your help. We just need your help for us to really take charge and control of this issue. Help, you know, just that's all we need, you know. And they did it.
These are our elders. There's a couple more that are missing, but they always came together. They started out a few people asking why we're going through such a hard time. And they never gave up. They continued to meet, and they grew and grew and grew.
Maybe you could explain your project name.
Our name is Thum Dunginun Gilgotik Igayusuda Agayutmuk, and it means movement towards wellness together with the help of God. This is one of our community, one of our meetings where we talk about what we needed to do or what we thought we needed to do, and our elders. At this time, I was just a parent participant, and so they gathered and talked about our issues and what they could do, and came up with solutions, and the more they met, the larger they became. These are our first elders in our group, and there's more. This is one of our Kazakh activities. You see, the men are sitting in a circle, and that's how our ancestors used to gather and teach our people life skills. This particular activity is, I believe it was on gender roles, where we met as a whole group for introduction, then we split, and the men, our elder men, talked to our young men, and over on the other side of the building were women, where women met, and the older women talked about life skills to the young woman. And here's some of our young people. Desiree is in the picture.
When the Ashram Dominion program first started, I was one of the many young people that joined the group. At the time, I was...
It's all right.
It was kind of hard growing up. At the time, my mom was thinking suicidal, and she would tell me and my sister that soon she wasn't going to be with us. I used to go and meet with them, and I'd talk to my friends. And I'd try to talk to my mom and let her talk to me. And, I was one of those children that didn't listen to my parents and my grandparents. And throughout the program, they taught me to respect my parents and respect my grandparents. And it helped me a lot. I would really try to talk to my mom about it, and after a while she started telling us everything would be okay, nothing's going to happen. But some mornings when I woke up and my sister was watching the kids and they were out, some mornings I'd be scared that my mom wouldn't come back home. It was hard to think that maybe one morning I'd wake up and my mom wasn't there. But me and my cousins would talk to her and would listen to her when she needed help. And listening to the elders talk to us during the Kazakhs, I'd listen to them and I'd go back home and I'd talk to my mom and I'd listen to her and ask her what's wrong. And after a while, she got better and she said everything would be all right. And sometimes I'd still be scared that maybe she's just trying to calm us down and say everything's going to be okay. But telling her what the elders would say to us and the stories they'd tell us, talking to her about it, I guess that's what really helped us. And I'm really thankful for the program. And sometimes my mom would say, yeah, she'd go with us, but she wouldn't, but would still tell her what they told us and the stories they'd say, or the stories they'd tell us, would tell to my mom. And I think the program helps a lot with everybody. Even if they don't go, if your friends don't want to go and you tell them about it, I think it helps a lot. It really helped me and my mom get through the hard times she had. I'm really thankful for the program, though. I'm sorry.
It's all right. It's all right. I'm glad you're here to tell your experience. Thank you for talking. I know it's scary sometimes, but keep on doing it, okay? Thank you.
Thank you for sharing with us. We're honored.
And that is how we were always afraid. We didn't know what would come about or who would be next. Thanks, Des. So, like she mentioned, when we get together for these activities, bonds start to be built between each other. You see elders and young people. Some of the young people don't know the language, and that can separate them. But when we come together, they start to bond, and relationships build. And when that happens, it's easier for us to share and share what we're going through. So we have that support. Not only that, we're learning to be self-efficient by learning our cultural ways. We're gaining confidence in ourselves. We're knowing our identity. The young people, especially in the teens, really have struggle with that. And so with this program, we learn who we are and where we come from, and that's a really big help. They learn cultural ways. You see the children learning how to cut the fish. We help our community members. We get ready for a spring breakup and put up their machines. And
oops, I'm sorry.
See, our kids, they never looked good like that. Our people never looked good like that. But this is one of our gazuks on the ayaruk making, our elders teaching the importance of the ayaruk, the walking stick, and how it can save our lives. And we relate that to ways of everyday living, you know, how to walk, which way to walk. If you go through this way and take the wrong road, like drinking or alcohol or any destructive behavior, then this is what will happen. But if you go this way, these good things can happen. So that's some of the things that are taught during these gazriks. This is our girls' gazpak making. Mm-hmm. The one on the left, her mom passed on, and we were so proud of her. She did her gazpak all by herself, by hand. And she felt so good and confident. And these are good programs, good projects. Here's another one of our gazwiks where we brought Hooper Bay in to train them on how what process we use during a gazwik activity. And this is what we want to do because we believe in it. We want to bring more people in and teach them how it can work. They won't use Alaganak's way. You know, when they get back home, they'll make it their own. Hooper Bay went back home and they make their own gazak, their own, and they do it how their elders teaches them.
Alaknak's program has been ongoing since 2006, we've tracked outcomes through the university with the research. The communities also track their own outcomes and come together and discuss the changes they've seen in their communities. And we came here 3 years ago. Billy and I came here 3 years ago and talked about some of those outcomes. When Billy and I came here 3 years ago, the community had asked us to come and share that they were going to be celebrating 4 years without a suicide, or 4 years, actually, the way that Paula Ayunarak put it, and she's an elder in that picture, It was 4 years since they cast the spirit of suicide from their community. And they were a very joyous time for Alaganak. But they continue to work on healing because it's an ongoing process. You can't stop. Mm-hmm. You have to continue to be as vigilant and not allow that spirit to come back. It requires vigilance. And that means it requires, what they're doing right now, which is continuing the work and bringing in new generations of young people, too, into it, and bringing in new generations of elders. Because a lot of those photos you saw of those elders today, many can't participate anymore because of health reasons. But, their teachings were preserved through this as well. That was another outcome of this. We have their teachings now. When they can no longer be with us here on this earth, they're still with us, always with us. And we can hear their voices, too. So, Josie, if you wanted to. And Josie, you're looking at amazing outcomes right here. And Josie was one of the most amazing instructors and parent leaders in the original project. And now she's the training coordinator for Alaganak's project right now. I thank you both.
Thank you.
Is there anything else you wanted to share before we...
No, unless there's questions.
We're not connected, then we'll move to Cooper.
Thank you.
Questions after or questions? Okay.
I'm sorry?
Maybe questions after. If you did have questions for Alaganak, then.
Not yet.
Okay. Hooper Bay. So Hooper Bay, Bill and I first went, I'll give you a little introduction. Bill and I first went to Hooper Bay in 2012. He's coming back, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
But proceed.
Okay. Billy and I first went to Hooper Bay in 2012. We went to the community, with lots of hopes and all kinds of different expectations. And when we got to the community, we always come together with all the, as many community representatives and leaders and people who are active and wanting to help in the community. So we brought this community group together, and Billy and I just kind of went. No briefcases, no PowerPoint, nothing. We just went and sat and asked them, basically, are you ready? Are you ready? And they said yes. So they told us they were ready. And the meeting really turned out, very much like it did in Alaganak at the beginning, where they sat us down and said, here's what Hooper Bay is going to do and wants to do. And they had immediately identified their very, they started identifying right away their resources. They didn't, that was another key difference. They said, here's what Hooper Bay has. Yes, we have these issues too, but here's what Hooper Bay has in terms of our resources and our strengths. We have these elders. We have people like Roy Bell in the community. We have young people like Talman, who they'll introduce themselves. We have people in our community who are ready. And we're ready to go. We just need some support. And that was amazing. And now, do you want to tell them about?
Hooper Bay and Alaganak, what's their economic situation? Are people working there? Is it mostly full employment or very limited employment opportunities?
In Hooper Bay, it's very limited. And the only jobs that are available is through city or through tribe or to the school or to the clinic.
Thank you. And at Alaganak? Do any of you think that the lack of job opportunities has anything to do with the depression that leads to the suicides?
I know in some cases, yes, and in rest of the others, no.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to add Hooper Bay, Alaganak, Emonic, and all the communities that are considered in the Wade-Hampton census area, they're considered to be the most economically challenged in the state, and in terms of income levels and so forth. And so, I think it's such a complex issue, and certainly that's definitely one of the issues. And as we're going through here, I haven't found myself writing so many notes on any issues as I have this one. This is something that I'm very passionate about. And so as I move forward with this, I will kind of expand on that, but many of the other issues that, you know, we're talking about. So thank you, though.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay. Good morning, and thank you for inviting us. My name is Roy Bell. I am from Hooper Bay, and I am the Kunazmik Program Coordinator for Hooper Bay.
Good morning. I'm Tom Mann from Hooper Bay.
Welcome. Thank you.
And as you can see, our program project name for Hooper Bay is Chivu Lemda Pichiriyagai, and it means our ancestral way of life. And go ahead.
I'm sorry.
And our Yupik name for our village is Nabayakami. Nabayak means trees, but when you go to Hooper Bay, there is no trees. And through the stories that I've heard from my dad and my grandparents, and we are warriors. And as you can see, Nabayakami, just like the trees, we stand tall, we stand strong, and we stand together. And that's the message we're passing it on to our kids. Here, we had few elders, including I and the Yupik teachers and a teacher aide. We met with the principal, and we told him that this is our school, and these are our children, and we want to be so much part of their education. And we're working with the Yupik teachers so we can continue working with them to pass it on to our kids. And here you can see we have women elders in our community, just like Alanak. We taught the girls the women's roles in our community. Same thing with the men, the boys. We did the same thing to the boys. This is where, right after we made chicken hooks, we brought them out to the ocean. So we're not only teaching them life skills, we're also teaching them what we know, which is subsistence hunting, because that's our way of life. Right here, you can see we taught eye safety, gun safety, boat safety, and survival skills. Because in Hooper Bay, we have the ocean, we have the river, and the land. And from hearing from parents, we have some young kids that were on the other side of the river, and it was high tide, and they were stuck on that other side until 4 o'clock in the morning. And so since this was one of the problems, we decided to bring the kids out to this area, which is called I'm sorry, I'm kind of nervous. You remember?
You're doing fine. You're doing just fine.
Okay. Nabayak? No, Kumisia.
Yeah.
Kumisia. That's right. I'm learning, just like my youth students are learning. We walked to Kumisia, and I purposely stopped right there where you can see we were eating, and I wanted the students to sit down and look around and to memorize that land, because that's where you can walk to cross the river to go back home. And this is where we were getting greens called kapugaps. It's like a long string, like spinach-like.
Mm-hmm.
And we also showed them the landmarks that I know, because I'm a subsistence hunter and I can really walk far away.
So
and I wanted to show them what I know, which are the landmarks that I use to walk home when it's foggy or windy or stormy. They know these landmarks. If you know them, recognize them, you can find your way home. And that's what I taught, including where the birds eat, where they nest, where we get these fishes, and so forth. And here are the youth group. They call themselves the Native Survivors. And this is the first time where we had the youth group be involved with our annual festival, the Louis Bunyan Memorial Festival, which is a community walk festival. And this is where the students took charge of crowd control. And just like our ancestors, we have winter games. And you all know the NYO Paralympics.
Mm-hmm.
Our ancestors, we had messengers that would run from one village to another. And so here, this is where they're having their marathon race. And Dawn was the only girl among all them. And then, just like Alaanak, we have Ayaok, which is a walking stick. And we showed them, told them, and explained them the many uses of walking stick and how, like Josie says, it can save your life. Here is the entrance to our Youth and Elder Center, which was built by City of Hooper Bay. And just like other villages, we have our history. And we have lots of pictures. And we use those pictures to tell stories to the kids. And here you can see we have mud house, log house, and today's house. And that's the picture that we were showing them and how Hooper Bay grew. And that area is Kamilmu, and that's where Hooper Bay now stands.
How big is Hooper Bay?
Tribal enrollment is over 15,000, about 15,000, and the census,
15 what?
And the U.S. census is like 13,000.
1,300.
It seems really big.
Really
nervous. No, it's good.
It gets cold.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Bob? I'm sorry, Representative Heron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess this question is to you, Roy. Stacy and Billy came to your village and the community told them they were ready. When did you realize that you were ready? I mean, what caused you to say that, the community to say that?
Before Billy and Stacy came, like I said, we have a Youth and Elder Center, which was built by City of Hooper Bay. I was working for them as a volunteer.
But I mean, what?
And the stuff that we have done was taking the kids out to the beach to pick some beach grass because Hooper Bay is well known for their baskets. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to let our children continue that tradition. And we've also taken kids out to the tundra to get some greens and eggs, clams, fishing. Mm-hmm. And
how long have you been doing this?
What?
How long have you been doing this? When did it start?
3-4 years.
3-4 years.
Yeah. And we, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, and we've heard, and we'd heard at those initial meetings too that from people like the tribal administrator at the time, Jonathan Smith, and a lot of your leaders were also saying that that they were ready because they'd had enough, and it was enough. They'd had enough,
you know, and it just, and they were all saying it. And I think another reason they said they were ready, and I do want to bring up after we do this, I really want to bring up, we have Hooper Bay's Tribal Council President and the Mayor, and Elder, I'd really like them to be able to speak to some of this. But they also said that they were, you know, first time really also starting to come together as the entities, you know, the city, tribe, corporation. There's so much division in the communities. And Billy's going to talk. Oh, you should talk about this.
I'd just like to add, when we came to the community of Hooper Bay, when we talked to the leaders, you know, they've heard stories about programs out there, and they weren't paying too much attention to us. And you, they told us, and these people are smart. And, you know, they see programs come and go. And when the funding runs out, you know, so goes the people. Mm-hmm. But when we, you know, when we were talking to the administration at the tribal hall, there was a vice chief sitting over there, you know, we thought he wasn't paying attention. But when we mentioned Kazakh, he came over here and called the meeting. He told the administrator, call the meeting of the leaders. Mm-hmm. They had enough.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Representative Theron?
So, Roy, this started 3-4 years ago. And, of course, many of us, you know, I'm from Bethel, but many of us remember that the large fire that started by the school was in part that the community was forced to come together and talk about things. Was that, maybe in a small way, was that the beginning of this awareness that they had enough? Do you remember that event, of course?
The fire.
The large fire,
the big fire that happened in Hooper Bay. I was working in Imanok.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that question could be asked when others come up, but because I was working for, the congressional delegation, and it was the first time that I'd ever gone to Hooper Bay. And it was stunning because, Madam Chair, it's a very large community in relative terms to the other communities around Bethel. But what was so remarkable about it was the community was forced to think about their future. And what's so amazing about it is a lot of people from all around came to help them. But I'll never forget the experience that I had when I showed up there right after the fire is the traffic jams of four-wheelers, people waiting to make left turns like we do in urban areas. But it was a convergence of so many emotions. You know, I was just an outsider, but it's remarkable that Hooper Bay has come so far.
Mr. Chairman? What do you mean exactly by forced to come together?
The example I use is in 1997. I'll use it, what it was relative to me, is in 1997, we had before Columbine, we had our Columbine, a teacher and a student were murdered. And so the region, not just Bethel, we were just stunned. And it was an opportunity that we embraced, and we took on the issue of at-risk students. And it really brought the region together. And so I relate it to when I went to Hooper Bay, it was similar, is that the community, given all the challenges that we have in daily lives, at least for a little while, because it was so scary, it could have been extremely catastrophic had those tank farms caught on fire. And so I think that's what I'm asking is, was that in part the reason that they decided to change?
Kind of like a wake-up call?
It was more than a wake-up call, yeah. But yes, Madam Chair.
And like I said, we Hooper Bears, we are warriors. And one of our tools, hunting tools, was a yo-yo. And in this picture, we showed students how they make the yo-yos that they use to play. And we also showed them how we use them when we were hunting with the yo-yos. And here's an example for you men. If you guys can chow-yuk, you know, drum, toya. Mm-hmm. You can do the yo-yo.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some pictures where you can see yo-yos dangling on those telephone wires or the electrical wires. The kids were really tried.
The people, young people in Valley use sneakers.
Yeah. And here we take, since Hooper Bay have a lot of history, you know, like we have old fish camp, mud house sites, and old village site. And right here, we took the kids out to the reindeer corral that used to be there. So we're not only teaching them plants, eggs, birds, fish, we're also telling them and teaching them our history that our ancestors have. And this is right over here on the right, left side of the picture, or this side, is Nuvugumi. And that's one of the other historical villages in our area. And right here is, right behind them, is Nuvugumi. And this is where my dad was telling the stories of one of the villages invading us. War stories. And this is the area where we have a famous footprint, which is shown right here. And right here is my dad, the mayor.
You listen to him.
Yeah.
No, no.
This is, my name is Joseph Bell. I'm the city mayor. And this is a real experience thing being a mayor. Lots of explorations, lots of learning. Nobody wanted to be a mayor, but all the councilmen, they said, Joe, come on, Joe. So I jumped in. So it's been a learning experience for me. Also, I'm also recently involved almost everything down at Oprah Bay. I was really grateful of these Billy and Stacy introducing us what they're doing on this. By the way, this is the Hoover Bay is the oldest village from the time of our ancestors. Oh. The first residential of Hoover Bay was close to 250. The first residents. From there they grow. This is the one area along the beach. Every month of March, this is where the community of Hooper Bay used to go down closer to the ocean to do their subsistence hunting, gathering all kinds of mammals. In fall time, this is the oldest residential for their subsistence. Leave their main village month of March and state builds out houses on these, and that's where they do all the subsistence all summer long till September. And the main village is they go up to the main village. Fall time, bringing all their subsistence gatherings. Also, these are the not far from us. The little dunes going up towards our village. These are the first ancestors. Two young ladies. Footprints. They're still there. They're still existing, and when I was younger, they were knee deep, but now they're only ankle deep. This is at that time, I think they had a little feast down there at the beach on those hot houses, and these two young ladies were curious, and they were they were underweight down. I think it was the time, the stories I've been hearing, I think the time that the land was just surfacing. Some part of the land was soft, really soft like snows. Soft snow, you mokok, yeah. You, those things. So these are really old footprints of those two young ladies.
And not only we tell stories in the center, we also go to the area where we plan to go, and we tell stories, hunting stories, fishing stories, war stories that our ancestors have lived through and passed on to, like my dad, to tell these stories. And we also have clay in Hooper Bay, and this is where we had students digging for the clay to make clay pots.
Getting back to this, those days, our elders, you know, they used to take fire bath, and I was their constructor, building my sod house. It's how I learned to make sod houses, helping our elders making a sod house. As you look at the picture, you follow that beam up there to towards the new school. And behind it, the main big kayak burned down. Kids burned a big kayak there at the main village. So this elders had no way of taking baths, so one day I went in the men's house and they were talking about, I wish we had a fire bath house. So I was there at the right time, and I told them, if you want me to make you, I'm still young, I'm still active, I'll make you a sod house, but you guys have to show me how. So I built another sod house, asking them how to build it up, and then I constructed and built it. It was maybe a 5 or 6 man kayak, and that's where I started. And as I was going, that main kayak that I made, and again, as usual, kids were exploring and picking blackberries. They accidentally burned that kayak again. So I asked him again, if you guys still want another kayak, yeah, this is where, on this side, right behind me, I built another one. This one, I make it a little bigger. So this kayak was maybe 10 men fire bath. So I finished the main. I put all the poles and everything. It was all ready to put sod ground over that my work. And as I was doing, I accidentally find the clay. The clay, it's about maybe a foot and a half or a foot deep. I found this clay. This clay, what our ancestors used to use. It's a gray clay, and through their program, I'm participating. I'm going to revise that clay to make potteries, oil lamps, and all those stuff. But this one, I do a little experiment on the clay. We pick it out. That's the first layer of the real dirt, and then that black clay, and the rest is all sand. And you could find seashells, everything on the bottom. So this is what we're going to use this coming summer. We're going to repick that clay and make a lot of all items from the time of our ancestors. And we are going to uplift those, what our ancestors used to use.
Good. Good for you.
And every year we have new teachers that come to our school, and most of them, they don't understand us Yupiks and how we live. And so at the Youth and Elder Center, we held a community potluck to welcome those teachers, welcome them to our community, and we show them who we are and how we live and so forth. And so through our community, just like our ancestors, we invite them, we talk to them, we mingle them, and get to know them. And so that's what we did to our teachers in Hooper Bay. And here, they're making dalyaks, blackfish trap. Yeah.
I was just wondering whether your teachers ever stay. You said that every year you have new teachers. Do the old ones leave and new ones come in, or do sometimes the old ones actually stay in the village?
There's some teachers that stay year after year after year, and then there's some that are like, oh, this is too cold for me, or we're out in the boonies and it's too much, so I'm going back home. I don't know. There's probably those reasons why they never return to Hooper Bay.
Thank you.
Okay. Getting back to this picture, I asked State Joeline if you had a little funding to get the materials for the kids. But my idea was to make real stuffs, not toys, not models. My theme was to make them real, what you're doing right now, teaching them how to make real stuff, tools for their subsistence. This is the one day I let them make these blackfish traps, and then when we were done with them, I know maybe two rivers that got blackfish. So they go out and set them out to those little rivers, and like 5 to 6 days they go check these what they made. They catch little, just enough blackfish, and then when they bring them back, they bring them to this youth and elder building and distribute the blackfish to our elders. And then our elders used to be really, really thankful. And by the way of this youth and elder building, we had a little fund left over. That was the time Rachel Moran was administrator. We had the leftover. We had a discussion. That time we didn't have enough driftwood, so they built this modern building, but it's a kayak, and we're using it now.
And in this picture you can see we make blackfish traps, and we also take the kids out to the areas where we catch blackfish. And the blackfish that we catch, we bring them back to the center and distribute them to our elders. So every subsistence activity that we do with the kids, what we catch, we give them to our elders. And here, they're making kusbuks, and as you can see, Tao is wearing the one that he made. And we take them out for dip netting, and we show them that out how they use the dip nets and where they catch the fish. And this is where we're teaching the young boys to drum and the young girls to dance. And they're taking over and making it their own. And here are the Hooper Bay traditional youth dancers. They went from 4 drummers to a lot. So it's growing. And the interest from these youth, I'll have Tao tell you.
I was one of the first drummers to start with practice, and from the beginning, there was only two of us, and as we started telling our friends and our dancers to come, it started to grow. More people start to show up, and you know, as they started showing up daily, their faces began to lift, and you know, it's just so much fun. They want to keep it going. And I don't really have much to say. I'm nervous.
Keep on rocking with your drums. I mean, you know, but I think that's what's, I think that's what's happening with our youth, kind of in our communities up north. That's what's happening too, is, you know, they're taking up drum and dancing and making drums and all that, and you see it on Facebook, you know, they want to go out and get together and start practicing and start learning new songs or old songs. So I think it's getting back to our to the basics of what we used to grow up with. That's what we grew up hearing when we were growing up, and I'm glad that it's starting with you. And that's a way to heal and to pass on traditions and songs and drumming to your generation and beyond. And thank you very much for doing that. And by the way, nice cuspos.
Oh, thank you. We not only teach them tools that they can use for subsistence hunting, we also teach them about healthy relationship, taking care of yourself, goals and dreams. Like, for example, I went to Los Angeles for college, and I told them my experience and what I did to accomplish those goals.
So Hooper Bay's program began in 2012, but as they've said that, you know, they've been working on this, they have been coming together, and they're continuing to build. But we did want to share with you some of the outcomes, both from the community members' perspective of what it's been doing so far, and as you have in your packet, we have data from our research that the youth are changing, the community is changing already. We can see the changes happening and need to continue to build that. But perhaps maybe this would be a time just to, in terms of the changes you've seen in Hooper Bay, maybe it'd be nice to have all of Hooper Bay. We brought a quite large group from Hooper Bay. We wanted to show you their commitment. And this is just a small part, but maybe they could come up.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that presentation.
And other youth too. Because we have two other youth that have been in the presentation. And Wilma. And Jermaine is our other, and that's the coordinator. She works with Roy, Jermaine Jarvis.
Well, everybody got nice cuspops. I should have worn mine. They're real pretty.
Beautiful cuspops. Yeah.
Tomorrow, I wear mine. Every Friday in this building is cuspop day. So everybody who has cuspops, legislators and staff, they all wear them every Friday. So I'm getting ideas.
It started out back in 2007 or 2008 when Mary Kapsner was representing Bethel, and so all the women legislators did it, and then it extended to women staff members, and then I guess a few years ago the guys got into it too. Benny leading the charge.
If I could ever come back here, I'll bring my hunting cuspook.
I got one too.
It's full of all the game that we've got over the years. But
me too. It's dangerous.
Yeah. Do we start or not yet or what?
Hi.
Well, thank you for having me here. My name is Ben Nukuzuk. The Healthy Family Navigator
and my employer is ABCP. My boss is Daniel Bill. And I'm so proud to work with Billy and Stacy and everybody here throughout this year. I started 13 months ago. For many years, suicide is something we got used to. I'll say what? Sorry. What a miserable thing to get used to.
Yeah.
And we came together, started working together. Billy and Stacy were godsend, and they they're helping us. We're continuing to work together, and build a good, better community. And we worked so hard last year in our own individual jobs, but we're working as a coalition. We're finding out words that we don't know. Coalition means working together, but we got our own little roles. And one of my specialties is to talk to the 9th to 12th grade kids, the kids that have most killed themselves over the years, year after year after year. It was an epidemic so bad, we used to start even thinking, I wonder who's going to be next, yeah. So, like that, a miserable thought. But we're taking a strong stand with the elders and the Billy and the kids, and we're doing what we can. We're imperfect people, college uneducated, but Billy brought something nice to it from the old traditional way of life, because there were so many groups that came in to try to help. This is the biggest difference I've ever seen. 2013, zero suicide in Hooper Bay. I'm usually kind of strong, so I cry, almost cry. That was we were at Berry Camp, and a state trooper plane started circling us where we go, Berry Camp. And it was then it did again, and this time did this with the wings. When I got my VHF on, it was a call for us to go home. What? It was my buddy Earl Samuelson, the trooper pilot out from Bethel area. And what, Earl, I know, I try to fish it out of information, but it was something bad, I know that. That was a long ride home, and I kind of thought it would be one of my brother or sisters who like to drink, one of the older ones, but when we got to the river, we found out it was my 14-year-old nephew. He had hung himself, very innocent, loving boy. Over the next couple of years, we watched my sister deteriorate, where she didn't want to live no more, and she passed on over a year ago. Hurts too. It really hurts deep. But I'm glad we're doing something as a team here, about this suicide. It's something that it's so preventable. I like to speak to the 9th or 12th grade kids and tell them there's no one single problem on this planet to ever commit suicide. I try to give them every scenario that the kids have from I was growing up and try to get level and give them everything that would make them think to commit suicide, but no, There's no reason, not even if your mom and dad pass on, because we pass on, or not even if you break up with your boyfriend or girlfriend. I try to think of every problem that kids may face to educate and inform them towards suicide prevention. Not even if you fall into a little trouble with the law, not even if somebody did something to you, I tell them to go to the police. I try to give every scenario, not even if your mom and dad divorce, and tell them there's people that care and help out there. So everything I try to get on the kids' level on my part in that one. With that, I don't think I have anything else too much to say, because there's a lot of people that want to speak. And I'm so happy to meet you, Ben. Our last name are even almost the same, and we live so far apart.
Well, you look a little better looking than me.
And good to meet you, Mr. Foster.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much.
Can I just ask?
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Was the suicide of your nephew, was that in 2010?
Isaiah Lake, yeah.
Okay. And I was there at that time, and so I just, I wanted to give everybody an opportunity to be able to speak first. But that is, an experience that, has really brought this whole issue it's brought it close to my heart in terms of wanting to do something about that. And so I'm just very honored to meet you. But with that, I just want to make sure we give others a chance. So thank you.
Thank you. Well, the sad days are the days when the anniversary of those evil things happen, and mine's coming up pretty soon. It'll be 5 years in March 9th. You don't want to ever go through that again. And I understand how it feels, and my friend, Representative German, knows the feeling. There's a lot of us who have been touched by this, and we're coming together. And it's good to hear from you. So, you got to let it out once in a while. You can't, if it bottles up inside of you, it's not going to help us. We need to start talking about it. We need to start telling our young people that it's okay to feel bad, but it's also good to get better, and you got to talk to other people. Talk to your friends. And I always tell people right now, if you see somebody who looks like they got the weight of the world on their shoulder, who looks really despondent, who's really looking sad, go over there, butt in, be rude, go talk to them. That person, maybe that person, life will be saved by you. We don't know. So, this is a sad thing, but we got to go through sad things before we heal. And so I want to thank you. It's just, it's good to let it out. Mm-hmm. And thank you for the stories you are telling, and thank you for doing the hard work you're doing. It's hard. Whenever we had, we just a couple of weeks ago, we had to bury another one, in Barrow. And that's a sad part. The good part is more and more people are talking about it, more and more people are coming forward and telling their story, and people are healing. And I'm glad to see young people involved here. Keep it up. Keep it going. Talk to your peers, talk to your friends. There's life. Life is precious. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Hi, my name is Wilma Bell Joe. I got hired under ROLCAP, AmeriCorps Birch, bringing initiatives in rural community health. And my program, we go through, we talk about suicide prevention, drug and alcohol prevention, and living healthy lifestyles. Before I got hired, 3 years, it's going to be going on the third year, I had lost my stepdaughter to suicide. And then a couple months later, I realized my oldest son is thinking the same thing. My family had really, really struggled because growing up, I lost 8 friends to suicide. I had a troubled relationship in a domestic violent relationship for 18 years. I was a health aide and a community health aide. And I had to get myself out of the behavioral health just to help fix my family. And that's what I did. But after losing my stepdaughter 2 years ago, and then finding out that my son is struggling with suicide, I decided to, you know, how I healed my family, working with them together. It really helped. And then I got hired last year. These are the kids that I work with, and I practically work with them every evening. I keep this building open almost every evening, you know, to teach, educate them. I learned to understand that, you know, when other organizations come and talk about suicide and all that, I realized some of the students were not getting it. So through my program, I learned to talk in their language to where they could understand the big words, college words, depression, stress. You know, they didn't really understand those things. So the more I learned to spend time with them and understand how they speak and what they, you know, what they understood, we broke it down. And then I have the tendency to, you know, want to talk college professional, and then having to talk as a little kid, you know, having to readjust and, you know, to make them understand. And I've been keeping these kids busy all year round, working with my family. My husband works with me, and I have all my kids in the youth group program. These students that we brought here, they are the leaders. Tao is the president, Don is the vice president. She's the secretary, and this is my daughter.
Keep it going.
And
part of you.
Yeah. I was surprised because, you know, my family's been through so much because my family was one of the fire victims of the 06, and we struggled so much. And, you know, enough is enough, right? I'm tired of struggling, tired of hurting, understanding these kids losing their best friends, because I lost 8 friends to suicide, and then I lost a stepdaughter. I know what it feels like. And then having to hear my own son wanting to do that, but, you know, he's changing through my program. He sees me as a mother that struggled so much, because he is the oldest one, and seeing how I changed to be a better person for these kids. These kids know my story because I openly tell them, don't give up. I constantly tell them, you guys are my future. You guys are my pearls, gems. You guys are my future. You guys are special to me. I honor you guys. I respect you guys. That's why I started this program, and working with Stacy and Joreen, Roy, it makes it more easier because, you know, we're adults coming together trying to figure out solutions, and hearing the kids and then hearing from the elders. So this program, I'm very grateful that these guys came, because if they didn't come, we probably wouldn't be this successful. And since I work closely with the behavior health aides and counselors, I kept contact. I work with them because they used to be my coworkers. I was a health aide during the 06 fire, and then I lost my job because we were moving house to house. And then when we finally got a stable place, I became a behavior health aide. And, you know, it was kind of hard. But then one elder came up to me and told me, you cannot help people unless you fix things at home. So I pulled myself out of there, and I became a stay-at-home mom to really fix my family. And my son and my daughter know the kind of mother that I was back then. I'm a much better mother today. And I tell these kids, no matter how bad your parents are, no matter what your parents do, always respect them, always love them, because they're the only ones that you have. And despite where you come from, you can make yourself better. You can do better. Do things that your parents have never done before. I encourage these kids to go to college, come back, finish school. You are worthy. You are something. You are more valuable because you hold our future. And, you know, we need to stop this pain, this hurt. And it all starts with you guys. And we are going to teach you all these things to understand how we struggled hard, that we all struggled the same, but in different ways, because we are all different. We all struggle with the same problems, the same situations, but it's different because we're all different. We're not the same, but, you know, we experience a lot of things. And teaching these kids, you know, in the beginning of our program, the kids, you know, they pop in and then pop out. And then by the end of the year, from being separate like this, the youth group is now woven like this together. We're helping each other. We're supporting each other. It's no more of this. No more I. No more I. It's we. Ours.
Yep.
And the way everything is woven together, I am so proud of these kids, because they show more unity, and they're more proud. You know, in the beginning there was a lot of sad faces, and they kept their distance. Now, even during our hangouts, you know, we have our practices in the afternoons, in the evenings. The way this group grow during our hangout, these kids, some of them would get the drums and they just start chowking. And then the other kids that are, you know, just hanging around, they see the other kids, so they go and join them. And then once they heard about it, they realize how much fun it was. And then having to learn to speak the language, because I told them, you know, the English version is, you know, how we're taught in school. We show pictures, pop-up pictures. But when you hear an elder speak in the language, you get to feel it. You get to see it like you're there. And you know, that spirit, that feeling, and that picture, it's not a pop-up picture. But when you hear them speaking it, it's like you're actually there. You get to smell it, you get to taste it, you get to feel it, compared to the English version is, you know, I ask them, I say, what's beach? First thing that pops up is a beach, right, with the ocean. What's a chair? That happiness, a picture of a smiling face. But when you hear the elders speak those things, they tell it with a story. And then, you know, it really paints the picture. Yeah. And then it captures the feeling. And then kids are like, wow, it felt like I was there. And I am totally encourage them to learn their language, because they say it's more, they understand it more, yeah, when it's under c-
because they get to feel it compared to the English versions where the pop-ups, the flashcards, you know. And they are so wanting to learn the language so bad.
Yeah.
And they call themselves the native survivors. Because in the beginning of the year, I had asked them, they were saying, most of us, you know, they were sad and depressed, and they said, they call us the lost generation because we don't speak, we don't practice our traditional values, we don't know how to do that. And now they came together and they talked about it, and they decide to call them the native survivors, due to the fact that they are going to study and learn how to become a survivor in today's world, taking best of both worlds and merging it together and saying, I am a survivor.
Yep.
I am a native survivor in today's world. I am taking best of both worlds to be who I am today. In the beginning, they weren't proud to be native, but now, as you can see, they really are proud.
Yeah, keep it going. Unfortunately, our time is running short. We have 5 minutes. So you want to wrap up?
Yes, we'll wrap up maybe. We were hoping for you to be able to ask questions, but we do have meetings, individual meetings, so that, you know, maybe you can ask them the questions when we're meeting.
Yeah, you're more than welcome to come and see us too in our office.
Yeah, we do. We have meetings set up already. Okay. We will be seeing you at 10:30, in fact. So,
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And I know this is busy part of the time of the year, and I appreciate you putting this together in your staff. So wrapping it up, Mr. Chairman, I'm hoping, you know, this presentation will show you, you know, a building of a curriculum in our communities. You know, education is... When you talk about education, we believe it's how you survive in the environment.
Right.
And, you know, too many times the education in, you know, the Western culture is not fully and used to the fullest extent that the native could. But if they were taught these initial things early in life, these protective factors, how much more would they be able to capture the Western education? You know, our ancestors were, you know, early child, they had it down to science. I am proud to have be working here as a researcher representing my community.
Yep.
We, our culture, our tradition, our ancestors were researchers.
Yep.
They did things over and over and over, and they perfected it.
That's right.
And when we collaborate with the university and they document this stuff, it's very exciting.
Yep, that's right.
So this is where we go with the model. And first, you know, when we first introduced this a couple years ago, you know, Representative Foster was very instrumental.
Yeah.
And they brought this through, and the state, you know, if you don't mind me saying the amount that started this work,
right?
And now we're trying to expand to the other regions.
Good.
It's an indigenous model.
Yes.
The only indigenous model with scientific proof that it works.
Yes.
It is.
Good.
In the state of Alaska.
So. And I just want to say, you know, it was, if we could just go, it's a Kazakh. It's a communal place. That was in existence for years. It was a place, it was a men's house. It was for cleansing.
Right.
It was, you know, where everybody came together. And Mr. Chairman, I don't need to say that to you. Every community in the state has this.
Yep, we have a Kazakh.
Yeah, and this is where... you know, if we bring this back in every community, and what you see here in your hand, what was handed to you by Josie, this Hungazvik, Hungazvik is the home for that Hungazvik. That's it's not a cook, you know, it's not a cookbook. It's a guide. When we look at those modules, it appears on the process that it takes to do an activity where the elders are teachers and they teach with compassion and love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very important. Sometimes these are absent in the Western, you know, education. And, you know, I'm speaking for my own community. But the Qazghiq, you know, and I'll wrap it up. You know, this word, even the teaching of the ayaro, the walking stick, is a symbol of life, love, and you know that you're not alone. It's holistic. It's comprehensive and it's spiritual as well. But when we get individualized, you know, we're so separated. You know,
yes.
Because you know we have our jobs, and we kind of separate ourselves. We really never come together. But in the Qazghiq, coming together as a meeting of the community is the first thing of healing. And that's what we did in La Pazga.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Representative Drummond, you want to say something?
I want to say I appreciate how you have represented the various factors that you put together with the drums, using the drums as your graphic to put them. I'm a graphic designer in my real life, and I do appreciate how you put it together. I don't know about you, Mr. Chair, but I have time to continue listening if you have to keep going.
No, I just you know, we might need the room. I don't know.
That's really what we came here to do, is we wanted to share the stories from Lackanuck and Hooper Bay, and we wanted to just thank you also, and we should have thanked you right away, Representative Foster, for making it possible. Because of the support you gave us in 2010, we were able to hire, we had an additional person in Hooper Bay. I think that was extremely critical for the success that we have had in Hooper Bay. And we have, and again, I just want to say we have both the empirical scientific data that it's working in Hooper Bay, and that also correlates with the community, what you heard from the community, what they're seeing in their community, you know. And you know, we get scared to talk about it. We get scared to talk about it when suicide isn't happening, you know, but we talk about it a lot when it is. But, you know, again, last year in Hooper Bay, last summer was amazing. I was out there for weeks in the summer, and it was an amazing feeling in Hooper Bay. Different. Something's happening there, and it needs to be continued. We can't stop now.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't see the next committee out there, so maybe we've got a little bit of time here. I appreciate the indulgence here. And I just really appreciate it. So good to see everybody come here. And so I just want to say thank you for coming and sharing your experiences here. And one thing that I wanted to stress here is it's not just us listening to this right now. These cameras up here, this is on the internet. Anybody can see what's going on here. You know, this committee meeting is, you know, there are folks throughout this building, there are little radio boxes throughout this building, and people can hear what's being said here.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just us, and you're getting this on the record, and it's official. We can share this with the world. And so I just wanted to go back and thank Billy for being here. I've been to his home in Mnemonic. He has, you know, shared with me some of the best Yukon Sen that I've ever had in my life here. And also wanted to thank Desiree for your testimony and thank everybody for your testimony. These are real life stories. These are stories that are so compelling, and these are what we need to hear. You know, as you spoke, Desiree, my heart was just racing, and it reminded me of the experience that I had, and I'm just, you know, floored to hear that, you know, a member of the family from Hooper Bay is here, who, you know, the boy who had committed suicide. I was actually there. I had knocked on the door, and when I did, nobody answered, and so I went to the next house, and within a few minutes, the VPSO pulled up, and it wasn't until after that we learned that a boy had just hung himself in there, and it was just, you know, so heart-wrenching to me, and to see how that affected the family. You know, and to see that the family had invited me in to the home, and to see the boy on the floor, you know, it was just so sad. And this is an issue in Hooper Bay, but it's an issue in so many of our Western Alaskan communities. You look at, I went to St. Michael just a few days after that, and I went into a home, and I just spoke. I dropped in and said hi real quick. The mayor brought me in, and as we walked out, somebody said that one of the ladies there, her son had just committed suicide 30 minutes before that. And so, you know, again, it just, this whole issue has just really been, you know, brought home for me. And so back in 2010, the media had brought a lot of attention to this issue, and I was representing the Lower Yukon at that time up until 2012. And so folks were calling me and saying, well, what's causing this? And it's not just one thing. You know, there is no just, it's so complex. There's, you know, people talk about, well, lack of jobs, loss of culture, alcohol, domestic violence and sexual assault, lack of hope for the future, depression. You know, these are all things that get compounded by other things that are maybe not so direct. For example, health issues, you know, in the Alaska Native community, diabetes is a major issue. You know, not being able to subsist. And that's led to food insecurity, the cost of food and energy that's putting strains on families to the breaking point. And so we've heard what some of those solutions are, you know, and that is, you know, being able to understand what goals and hopes are and dreams and respect for your parents and your elders so that, you know, the family life is more cohesive. Support of our traditional and subsistence practices, you know, learning our Alaska Native languages so that, you know, a bond is being created so that we can share amongst, you know, each other. And so the bottom line is all of this, it's rooted in the culture of the local community. We talk about federal overreach all the time and how we need to bring things to the lowest level. And this is exactly what this program is doing. And a major component of the solution is going to be embracing our Alaska Native heritage, you know, when we get out to our small communities and our villages in rural Alaska. So with that, I just want to thank everybody for coming down. You know, very much appreciate it. I look forward to being able to visit with most many of you. And Stacy, thank you for your work as well. And but again, you know, this was brought to my attention by these individuals. So, you know, I just want to say the thanks is with you, and I appreciate that. And I do see our next committee here. So
thank you, Madam Drummond. You can. Yeah,
I just want to say really quickly, I so appreciate all of you traveling so far from home to come and share your stories with us. I'm on the House Education Committee, this standing committee, and I'm sure that this entire suicide history, just its mere existence, has impacted every aspect of your communities, and I want to put it on you as the researchers, mm-hmm. to try to pull that together and not just keep it in this committee, mm-hmm. but look at how we can help you in every aspect of village life, because our responsibility is to provide an education to all the children of Alaska. And if children in Alaska are dealing with the fallout of suicide in their communities and losing their friends and their relatives, it's going to impact their ability to appreciate, to get something out of their education. And I'm glad that you're all encouraging your children to go to stay in school, go to college, and come back. But I want to know how the Department of Education can help. And it starts here with with us. Okay? Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm sorry, but we have to.
Thank you.
We're
standing adjourned at 10:05.